You're listening to the Lawyer Lifestyle Podcast with Chicago attorney Dave Scriven Young.
It's Tuesday, so that means another Legal Power Players episode. Every Tuesday, I bring to you an interview with someone who's in power in the legal industry or someone whose superpower is in marketing, sales, and leadership. Today, I'm excited to have Rob Brewer on the show. Rob is an attorney and one of the founding partners of R&R Law Group, a criminal defense law firm located in Scottsdale, Arizona. After years of practicing law, Rob transitioned over to the marketing world and now focuses mainly on helping R&R Law Group grow and thrive as a business. Due to his great success in video marketing, Rob developed the Grueler Method, which is a program designed to teach other law firm owners how to turn their videos into profit. Rob also serves on the board of directors of the nonprofit organization EricsHouse.org, focusing on helping those recovering from a tragic loss due to suicide or overdose. In 2019, Rob launched the Clean Slate Sobriety Program and travels to substance abuse and treatment centers to help those in the journey of recovery clear their criminal record and move forward with a clean slate. Rob also released his first book, Beginning to Winning, which provides criminal defense strategies to help individuals begin and win their case. So Rob, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, David. Thank you for that nice introduction. I'm excited to talk to you today.
Excellent. Well, thanks for being with me. And I wanted to start with sort of your law firm journey, because I know you didn't start off having your own firm. And I think a lot of people who listen to my podcast are possibly interested in making that transition. So I wonder if you could tell us just about sort of your law firm journey and how you came to open up your own shop.
Yeah, you know, it feels like a long road, but it really didn't happen over that much time. When I came out of law school, I got a job at a local criminal defense firm here. When I was in law school, I worked for 2 years for free, and, you know, just as an intern, unpaid intern, and they gave me a job when I came out. And, you know, I was very grateful for this job because I had no idea how to run a law firm or, more importantly, how to get clients. And they really hid the ball from us. You know, they had an entire intake department and they just kind of used us to churn and burn and kind of grind through cases. And I never really understood, you know, where they were getting their clients from or how it all worked. And that kept me in my little cocoon. You know, I was very scared to go off on my own because I didn't think that I could get my own clients. I didn't think that I could, you know, have the wherewithal to start a business and be successful. And as I was working there for about a year and a half, you know, I started to explore other opportunities and I moved over to a different law firm. And at that second law firm, they had a little bit of a different model. So their model was you worked, you know, instead of getting a salary like I had at my first firm, we got a percentage of the case. And so this kind of forced me to go out and start thinking about generating clients, because not only was I supposed to be working the case, but I was supposed to be actually generating the business. And this was a little bit of a unexpected requirement of me. I thought I was going to show up there and they were going to do the marketing and they were going to do the sales. They would assign me the cases and then I would get a percentage of the case that I worked. Well, that wasn't the situation. So they started, you know, beating the drum. You got to go out there and go to these networking groups and go do all of these things to generate business. And I did, and I started to learn some of this stuff, and I started to, you know, to watch YouTube videos and, you know, read about the different legal directories, and I picked up some books, and I really wanted to succeed here. And then once I started to become successful, I thought, why am I only getting a percentage of these cases that I'm generating and working on? And this doesn't seem right to me. And so I only lasted about 4 or 5 months there before I actually started building my own firm, sort of, you know, kind of on the sly a little bit. You know, I started to experiment around with it and learn how to set up, you know, the structure and the payment processing and all of that stuff. And then finally, it got to a breaking point and I just said, okay, enough already. So I told one of my best friends that I'm going to go do this thing on my own. And he had worked at the same firm with me. And he said, that's kind of hilarious. I was thinking about doing the same thing. Why don't we just do this together? And that's kind of it. We founded R&R Law Group in 2014. And we had some pretty good, you know, growth kind of immediately. We were, you know, I was always had a kind of a natural knack for the tech stuff. And so I started figuring some of that out. And then we just made, you know, then that's kind of what led us to where we're at now.
That's a great great introduction to what you do. And I'm just curious as to your entrepreneurial tendencies in terms of not everyone, I think, may be cut out for running their own law firm. And I'm sure that you come across a lot of people who are who go out on their own but aren't as successful as you are. And I'm curious as to sort of why do you think that you and your partner have been successful, whereas, you know, there are people who I think have sort of the same sort of story where they're not happy with where they're at and they want to go out on their own. Like everyone's dream is, I think, to go out on their own. But why do some people fail and why did you succeed?
So certainly part of it is, you know, serendipity to some extent. Ryan and I, we are excellent partners. I mean, he is sort of become like a brother to me. You know, he's helped me through a lot of things in my life. And we've also just by, you know, happenstance, we have a good division of labor. The things that I'm good at, Ryan's not so good at. The things that he's good at, I'm not so good at. And we recognized that early on. And we made that division of labor pretty clear, you know, so he could go tackle the things he wants to do. I can do the things I want to do. And it really worked well for us. The other thing that I think is absolutely essential is coaching. From the very beginning, Ryan and I have made it a point that we are going to get just a tremendous amount of coaching. And so we founded our firm in 2014. By early 2015, we had already started working with coaches. And that has been something that has been integral in basically everything we do. I mean, I spend a ton of time with, I've got a business coach. I've got a sort of personal development coach. I have a speaking coach. We've got, you know, all these different courses that we go to. I mean, we spend a lot of money and a lot of time, you know, learning how to do this stuff. It's not like I just, you know, read a couple articles or picked up a book on Amazon. For the last 5 years that our firm has been around, it's been one of the primary things that we do. You know, we spend a lot of money and a lot of time on it. That's why I think our results are different than some other people who are just not willing to do that. They think that, you know, a book will cover it or listening to a podcast, you know, and I'm a huge podcast fan, that's going to cover it for them. But we really started to level up when we brought in the experts who've already, you know, helped build these things before, show us the right way to do it and the wrong way to do it.
Well, let me ask you, because I know there's a lot of charlatans out there. I'll be very frank with you. And I wonder, where did you find the coaches that worked for you? Is it just referrals or just people that you worked with? How did you find your coaches?
We've changed coaches a lot. You're right. There are a lot of charlatans, and we've got a lot of bad advice from some of our coaches. And we've fired coaches and transitioned from coaches. You know, one of the things that I think caught us by surprise, or we got taken advantage of to a certain extent, are the coaching companies that really, really focus on lawyers to a certain extent. I mean, so my program does that, right? I focus on lawyers, but there's most of the other people that we've gotten a lot of value from, they don't necessarily, you know, a law firm is a business just like any business. And I think a lot of the times lawyers get a little, they pigeonhole themselves because they think they need something that is specifically for lawyers or law firms. You know, we are special. We're lawyers. We're not like the other businesses. And the reality is that's not really accurate. And, you know, there are some of these coaching companies and some big ones out there that really cater to lawyers, and they're kind of doing you a disservice. They're taking a lot of money from you. They're not really helping you do any of the work or thinking things through. They just have a template that they follow and a process that they just grind you through. And so we found our first coaching company at a law firm, Lawyernomics, right, which is an AVO big event that they do every year. And we were there, and we got connected with some people who were, you know, they provided more value than they didn't, but we did get some pretty bad advice. And eventually we grew out of that program and we matured into other, you know, developed relationships with other coaches. And so, you know, I've got a lot of thoughts on that, but I mean, it's, you know, my point would be that lawyers don't necessarily need to work with a lawyer legal specific company or coach, because a law firm is just like a business. There's certain things that you can outsource, and there's certain things that you should never outsource. And you just got to find, you know, a coach that's going to hold you accountable and make sure you're doing what you say you're going to do. And I think you'll see some growth that way.
Yeah. And the reason I ask is, I mean, there's a ton of, you know, Facebook ads, as I'm sure you know, for people and companies who are catering their message to lawyers and, you know, growing your business through a method that you've never heard before. And that's, you know, that sort of thing. And I've had a lot of conversation with a lot of coaches, you know, over the years. And yeah, I mean, I agree that, you know, part of it is just, you know, maybe just trying one and seeing if that's the right fit for you. And then, but yeah, I mean, I've seen that as well, where you just, you can get a lot of bad advice because, you know, people, and having a track record, I think, is important as well. I don't know if you've seen that. Getting some real testimonials from folks, understanding, you know, how many lawyers they've helped or just people that they've helped, and talking through the program with them, I think has helped me in the past. I don't know if it's helped you as well.
Yeah, I mean, our current coaches are all referral bases, and they're, you know, the best networking groups that I'm a part of are, you know, are entrepreneurial groups. They're not legal groups. They're not, you know, the bar. Lawyers will go to the bar, you know, the bar events or their local city bar or any of those, you know, CLEs and things. And it kind of turns into a commiseration fest where they're all, you know, woe is me, life is so hard. And it's really easy to get caught up in that. And I'm talking about myself. You know, I was caught up and involved in that. I mean, I spent years working for different law firms, scared because I didn't think that I could take that step and go start my own company. And so when you get around, I think, you know, other entrepreneurs, and it is, I think it's kind of a learned skill. You know, this is something that you need to evolve. You need to allow to mature. But if you're hanging around with lawyers all the time, who will tell you that you can't do things and it's scary and the liability is so risky out there and you got to pay for insurance and all this overhead and stuff. It's a lot of no, 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 where, you know, it's fine. You know, entrepreneurism and starting your own law firm is not for everybody, but there is, you know, there is a way to get plugged in with a group that will help inspire you and will help motivate you and will show you the way forward. And the faster you can get plugged into that, the more success I think you'll have with your firm.
Well, let me ask you about, you know, one of the things that I know that you do that many, many lawyers and many others would say, no, 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 lawyers can't possibly do that, which is to produce legal videos where you're providing some advice to potential clients. And so I'm curious as to how you came upon this YouTube method that you use. And just tell my listeners a little bit about that.
Right. So my first video, I was looking back through the timeline. The first video that I put on YouTube was in about 2015. So our firm, about a year after we opened our firm. And the reason I did that is because everybody in the world who was doing marketing said, you have to do videos, you know, and I didn't know almost anything about it. And I just thought, okay. And if you go and look at it, it's a rough video. I mean, it's brutal. And it's still on our YouTube channel. It's one of the first ones out there. We had some other company put, you know, some kind of stupid fake videos on there. And then I said, I'm just going to try to figure this out. So I got a camera. I painted the wall in my house like a gray for some reason. And I got up there. My shirt is super puffed out. My lapel microphone is like, you know, you can see the cord sticking out every which way. My tie is rough. You know, the camera's out of focus. The audio is grainy. It was a disaster. But I made it because I forget who I was listening to at the time. Somebody was screaming at me about, you got to do more content. You got to do more content. So I said, all right, fine. So I'll make the video and I put it on there. And this wasn't at the direction of any of my coaches or anybody else. You know, it would have been somebody like a Gary Vee or, you know, Grant Cardone or one of those guys saying who's just putting out a lot of content. So I tried it. And a couple weeks later, it worked. You know, somebody called our law firm and they hired us. They said, hey, I found you on YouTube. And I was blown away by this. You know, at this point in time, I had no idea that this was even something that happened. I just made a video because I was bored one Saturday night or something like that. And so it worked. And then I thought, this is crazy. You know, I didn't have to hire a company to help me with this. I just had a kind of a cheap garbage camera and it worked. And so I made another video. And then for some bizarre reason, I stopped. So I made these two videos and I put them on there. And then, you know, our firm was kind of in the infancy. So we're moving offices. We grew pretty quickly. We started hiring people and, you know, we hit kind of seven figures in revenue probably in 2016, I think. So about 2 years after we opened. And, you know, I was dealing with personnel issues, and marketing just wasn't that big of a focus for me, in large part because I got a lot of bad advice from that other coaching company. And they told us, you are a lawyer. You don't do marketing. You have to outsource that stuff. You have to hire a company to do this. You're bigger than that. You're better than that. And we did. We followed their advice. And so from about 2016 to about 2018, my presence on YouTube is almost non-existent. I mean, very, very minimal. And we started using these other companies and following the advice of our coaches. And we started to see just terrible results. You know, the quality of the clients that we got was down. The quantity of the clients, the potential clients that we got was down. It was a disaster. And I'm starting to look at these numbers and they just don't make any sense. And so I'm thinking, this isn't working. So I go back to, you know, what I know. I'm going to go learn more about this. It's 2018. I'm going to start, reading what the gurus are saying now and trying to get a little bit more plugged in and find resources outside of our coaches. And I was listening to Brennan Bouchard on something, I forget what it was, but he said there's really four things in any business that you should never, ever outsource. And I forget what the other three are, but marketing was one of them. And that really stuck with me because I thought, he's right about that. You know, your message, your brand, the things that you want the public to perceive about you, you know, you have to be controlling that. And you have to, that is almost what leads the rest of the firm. You know, you can really set your message in marketing, and then you can ask the rest of your team to live up to the message. And it just made all the sense in the world to me that this is something that I can no longer delegate out. So in 2018, I started making more videos. One of the first videos that I made, which did very well, and I made it out of necessity, was a video about photo radar, right? In Scottsdale and in Arizona, we have all of these traffic cameras all over the place, and they drive people bananas. I mean, you know, we're a criminal defense law firm, but we also do traffic because we've got criminal speeding and reckless driving, and all of those are criminal charges. And so just there was overlap. People would call us about photo radar. And I got tired of talking to people about photo radar, to be frank. So I said, all right, I'm having the same conversation, you know, multiple times a day. I'm just going to make a video about this thing. So I did everything that I knew about photo radar. I put it into a 30-minute video, and I just said, okay, team, if anybody calls about photo radar, send them this video. So, because I don't want to talk to them. They send them the video. The people watch the full 30 minutes of the video. It answers almost all of their questions, and they would still call back and they would still say, I still want to hire you guys. Like, thank you for that information, but I don't want to do any of that myself. Why don't I just, you know, hire you guys to handle this for me? And that's kind of when it went off in my head, like, all right, this is a different model. I read a lot of Dan Kennedy at that time about, direct response marketing, about providing value to the person before you ask them for something, which was a novel thing. You know, most lawyers, I'm not going to talk to you until you pay my consultation fee, or until you're hired. I'm going to gatekeep. I'm going to guard all of this information until you pay me for that. And I thought, that's not really, you know, 2018, 2019 mentality anymore. Now it's about giving the information first, building the relationship, creating a connection with your audience. And if you give them something of value, then they will turn around and hire you regardless. And so that was sort of the epiphany that I had. And in 2018, I set myself a schedule and I said, I'm going to release, edit, produce the whole thing, one video every single weekday. And I kept that pace by myself, editing, transcribing, you know, doing the whole process, getting it uploaded, doing the hashtags and the descriptions, everything, myself for about a year. And the results were mind-boggling. You know, it was mind-blowing. We were doing very well, but clients would watch videos, and they would call and they would hire us. And they were great clients. They were people who were, you know, they would have a conversation with us, and they sort of knew how we did things, and they knew what my philosophy was, and they were eager to hire us because I had already given them something. They would call other law firms, and the law firms would just bark out a price. And they would say, this is what it costs for that DUI. This is what it costs for that domestic violence. People would go to our YouTube channel or find us, and they would say, gosh, these guys are great. You know, they're giving me all these answers for free. And they would call and hire us anyways. And so that's kind of where we were off to the races. with that, I upped my production schedule to actually, we were releasing about 20 to 25 a month. I brought in my creative director. Her name's Faith. She's incredible. She's such a huge help. And then we increased our production to about 60 videos a month. And now we're putting out about, according to Faith, and I, you know, this changes because she's leading this, somewhere between 25 to 50 pieces of content every single day that's happening, except Sundays. So she's got this whole calendar and this whole schedule. And so our production has really evolved, but it's taken a long time. And it is, it's truthfully, it's the best thing that we've ever done for our law firm. And so that's why I'm so excited to talk about it all the time. You can tell I can just keep going and going and going because it is that valuable.
Well, that's awesome. And congratulations on, you know, taking that step. And I think it's a step that most attorneys don't take. So lots of questions for you. One is, so for someone who's new, I mean, I think a lot of people understand what YouTube is, although, you know, some lawyers may not in terms of, you know, how to find content and that sort of thing. But How do clients find your YouTube videos?
Yeah, it's a great question. And this is kind of the foundation of why what I talk about works is because people know, right? Google is the biggest search engine in the world. And I think in the US market, it's like 80% of every single search goes through them. But what many people don't know is that YouTube is really, by many metrics, the second biggest search engine in the United States. So right after somebody's on Google, somebody goes over to YouTube. And so if that's all you thought about, you want to be on YouTube because a lot of people are just there just in general. And you know, some people may not use it that way, but I always do. I mean, I tell the story where I needed to fix one of my friend's car key fobs. I didn't know how to open it. Where do I go? YouTube University. There's a video right there. I know the exact tool, the exact battery, everything. It's right there. I learned it in 2 minutes. Or I could go to the car manual that has 100 million pages in size 3 font that would take me a month to find it, right? So that's kind of how people use it. But the other, I mean, critical part of this is that oftentimes Google will just incorporate the YouTube videos directly into their search results. So now you're winning in both platforms. So if somebody types in Arizona Photo Radar, you're probably going to see 3 videos of me right on the first page of Google that it's pulling those search results from YouTube and just shoving them right there. So what I teach in my course is people need to be very specific with their video content. They need to, you know, make very niched down videos that are answering a single specific question, because when somebody types that into Google, it's going to pull it right from YouTube and throw it right on the first page. And because video is so highly favored, you know, it's the type of content that the social media companies want to see. You see Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn now, they're all rolling out their, you know, or really making even more robust their video marketing platforms. LinkedIn just introduced live videos that we still haven't gotten access to yet because we're too small, but you know, it's coming and we're going to be ready for it when it does. So, you know, video is so highly emphasized that it's showing up everywhere. And if you make your videos in a focused manner, you're going to start showing up for the types of searches that your potential clients are making.
You're such a prolific content creator, and I think that's awesome. But my question is, how do you come up with all of this content, like these topics? Do you get it from your clients, like consultations, or where do you derive some of this material that you create videos about?
So I would absolutely start with your clients, right? So you're a lawyer, and you know at your law firm, clients are calling every day and they're asking questions. If they have that question, chances are somebody else does. So what I do now is I just have my team actually help me curate those questions. So we use Slack, and we have a channel in Slack that's called Research. And if anybody across the firm, we've got 21 employees now, if anybody has a question or any client has a question, they throw it right into the Slack channel. And then we've got some interns who will help research the question, and we have some curation that goes on. So Faith will say, nope, we already made a video about that. We already made a video about this, but that's a great question. We haven't discussed that yet. And so she'll kind of assign things, and then we'll curate those questions. And that's what I was doing when I was doing this all on my own. That's exactly what I would do. I would just write down questions, and I would start there, because that's real-time feedback, and you're already answering it. I mean, that's the beauty of this thing. You're already explaining what the solution to their problem is. All you got to do is turn a camera on and record it. So that's one. But the other places that you can easily get them from are, of course, places like Avvo and Justia. They all have Q&A forums. There are people asking and answering questions there. You can go there. I encourage people also to get, you know, you can't see it, but I have a book back there that is a NOLO consumer guide. So I would say whatever practice industry you're in, there is a consumer guide for it, or there's a frequently asked questions book. So you can just pick up that book. There's about 1,000 questions in there that NOLO or one of these other big entities has already basically curated for you. And that's a good jumping off point. Now, a lot of those, you know, a lot of the answers and the responses in those books are not going to apply to your specific practice area, but it's a good jumping off point. And what they'll typically do is they'll bullet stuff out. So it's almost like you've got a script built for you. And then the last thing that I did, this was very important. I encourage people to do this, is just go through your statutes. So just go down the criminal code and just put a question mark at the end of every one of those, or the family code or whatever practice area you're in. And you just say, what are the penalties for a possession of prescription drugs? What are the penalties for this? Or, you know, how does this work? And you just explain the statutes, and you do it in a way that is, you know, explanatory. It's not, you're not explaining this to other lawyers. You want to kind of, you know, whittle this stuff down so that it's digestible from a non-lawyer. And there are content for days. I have like 30 videos in my queue that my team has curated, drafted, researched. Now all I got to do is sit down and record them.
That's great. Talk to me a little bit about authenticity, because I think a lot of people are maybe afraid to be on camera, would prefer that someone else shoot the videos. How did you make that step into determining that, you know, you should be that person to make the videos, as opposed to, I don't know, hiring an actor or, you know, having a marketing company come in and shoot these videos on your behalf?
It is probably the biggest hurdle, I think, for most lawyers, is getting comfortable with that. And just like anything, it really is like a muscle. You know, when you go to the gym and you haven't been to the gym in a long time, it's tough. It's hard. You don't like it. It's pretty miserable. But you've been going to the gym for 2 weeks. Suddenly it gets easier. You can start to move some, you know, more weight around. You can run longer. You're not, you know, gonna keel over on the treadmill anymore. It's the same with video. You know, there is a period of uncomfort, no question about it. And I still get it. Now I do a live show once a week, and, you know, right before I'm about to go live, I still from time to time will get the sweats, and I get the little frog in my throat. It is uncomfortable. It is new to me. You know, I didn't grow up with live streaming. You didn't either. You know, this is something that we have to exercise and we have to get better at. And every time you record a video, it gets a little bit easier. Every time you make a mistake and you let it stand, it gets a little bit easier. And what I tell people all the time is that done is better than perfect. It doesn't have to be perfect. For example, I just did a video. I did a live stream about not this week, but the week before, and I totally blew it. I mean, there was a segment about that it required me to do some math on the fly. And when we opened the program, I was telling you there's something that Ryan does and there's some things that I do. Ryan does the math for the firm. There's good reason for it, because I do not do it well. And so I was trying to do this math on the fly in the middle of this live stream show. And I thought I had it, you know, I thought I had it all figured out, and I just presented it. And then I made some conclusions on the argument based on my wrong math. And I, you know, I finished the show. I'm like, that was a great show. And I wake up the next day and there's like 55 comments. You're a moron. You can't add. Why would anybody hire this lawyer and all that stuff? Right. And so, you know, other lawyers would say, well, you got to pull that down, right? You got to take that off and you have to remove that. And, you know, that is doing something to your brand or whatever that is. And I just don't subscribe to that. Right. There are many other people who will say that that's just a live stream. You know, that's just what this guy was talking about. He didn't get the math right. And it's really not that big a deal. It is authentic. And so next week when I do the show, I'm going to get a huge calculator. You know, I'm going to hold it up in front of the camera, and I'm going to have fun with it. You know, just kind of own that mistake a little bit. And it's okay. You know, the state bar is not going to come banging your door down because you made a mistake on a live stream. You know, you're not going to lose a good client because you made a mistake on a live stream. And in fact, you know, we get people who come in all the time who say, gosh, I really got to know you just by watching you. And that's why I'm here. That's why I picked up the phone, because, you know, your audience can't see me now, but I try to be approachable. I try to be authentic. I'm sitting here in a polo, you know, and I want people to not be afraid to interact with me or to build a relationship with me, because they're already afraid. They've been charged with a crime. They were in handcuffs. They've spent the night in jail. So that's the way I do it. Doesn't mean it's the only way to do it. There are other lawyers who, you know, a mistake is catastrophic for them because of their clientele. You know, they want precision. They want discipline. They want, you know, high production value. And so there is that approach as well. But for me, it's just about, I'm just trying to help people. I'm trying to spread information. And from my perspective, as long as I'm providing value to the viewer or to the prospective client, I'm okay with that. I'm okay making mistakes, and I'm okay waking up to those comments. To a certain extent, I will still tell you, I have not developed that thick of a skin yet. You know, there are days where I'll check my comments, and I always regret checking the comments, because we get a lot of comments every month now. And you know, there it's kind of a cesspool of comments that you can see around the internet forums, but it's just part of the deal. And the benefits vastly outweigh any of those criticisms, any of those, you know, online trolls who will want to come and kind of tear you down. You're always going to have that. But the more reps you do with video production and the more comfortable you get with being uncomfortable, you're going to get better at it. There's no question. And then the dividends are going to pay off in the long run. And what I always will tell people is, like, you're building something here. You know, you're building an asset. And if you think about it that way, you suddenly get a little bit more motivation to do it. At least I did, right? I'm building a channel. Many of our competitors, you know, they pay for TV commercials, they pay for billboards, for bus signs, for, you know, advertisements in magazines and newspapers and things like that. As soon as they stop paying, that stuff goes away. It's gone. They have no more audience. They have no more eyeballs. Nobody's looking at them. Nobody's picking up the phone. We make these videos for YouTube where I'm providing actual value. I spend 8 to 10 minutes, you know, telling somebody, this is what the law says. This is how to handle it. You don't even have to call me. If I have an answer for you, you can just go solve it on your own. Here's the information. And every time we add a video, that asset increases in value. It compounds. And we own that. We own those videos. And it's just, you know, grows and grows and grows. And it just provides this constant influx of people who are interested in hiring and working with our firm because we gave them so much value at the outset.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny that you mention live streaming, because I've done my share of live streaming, and I do a Wednesday night show on emotional intelligence skills. So essentially soft skills. And it's just, you never know what's going to happen on a live show. You don't know if the technology is going to work. You don't know, you know, I have two kids and a dog. So, I mean, my dog is actually eating right now. So you might be hearing him eating. So it's like, you never know what's going to happen. And it's fascinating, because it kind of, all of that has kind of prepared me, and it's kind of like, yeah, anything could happen. So just let it happen.
Yeah.
And if there's a mistake, so be it, because at least I tried it. At least I went out there and did it. And you're right. I mean, the more and more that I do these live streams, I don't know if I get better at it, but I get more comfortable with being on camera, with giving a message online. So yeah, I mean, it's great that you gave that story, because I think everyone is sort of like, yeah, I mean, what if something goes wrong? Well, guess what? It's going to go wrong, and you just have to be comfortable with it, and you have to be willing to just face whatever comes your way.
Yeah. And another point on that is that, you know, we grew up in a generation, at least this is my experience, where the internet feels very permanent to us, you know, because that's just kind of how we grew up. You put something on the internet, it feels permanent. You know, this is never leaving. And so it has to be perfect, and it has to be right. That's kind of not how people are using it anymore. You know, if you make a mistake on a YouTube live stream, is that person going to remember it, or are they just going to keep scrolling on their window to the next story? And the reality is that's what they do. You know, they just move on to the next thing. And that video is sort of lost into the archives of the internet. Of course, you know, it really is permanent. They can always go find it, and there's always going to be copies and all of that. So, you know, you don't want to get out there and start bad-mouthing, you know, minorities or something like that. Like, that is not a good, right? That is the type of mistake that's catastrophic. But most of these little mistakes, flubbing an introduction or, you know, stumbling over a word here or there, or even making a mistake. I'll make mistakes all the time. I'll be in the middle of saying something. The words will come out before I really, they should have. And then I'll have to say, well, okay, you know, so I didn't actually mean that. What I shouldn't have said that. What I really meant was X, Y, and Z. And, you know, there's some forgiveness there. But once you're done and the show has been viewed, you know, it's they're on. People are on to the next story. The attention span is just it's so minor. You know, I've lost sleep some nights over videos that I've put out there because I thought, oh my gosh, I totally blew that. You know, I said something stupid. What are people going to think? And I expect to wake up the next day with, you know, the world melting down, and nobody cares. Nobody cares. Nobody watches. You know, it's one of those things that you make it a much bigger deal than it is. And then, you know, you do it for 6 months, a year, and then you stop making those same mistakes. So it's just sort of the natural progression. It's kind of like growing pains, just like going to the gym. Eventually you come out on the other side and you're much stronger.
Absolutely. Let me ask you about goals, because I think some people have unrealistic expectations concerning social media in particular. I mean, I remember I was in a marketing meeting with a marketing professional at my firm, and she was asking, you know, well, what's the ROI, you know, on the social media that you do? And so I'm curious as to how you would answer a question like that. But specifically, you know, what was your goal for creating these videos? Was it getting cases in? Was it getting likes and comments? What was your goal? And has that goal changed over time?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I mean, the ROI question is like, I don't know, 1,000 to 1. I mean, the only costs that go into it is my time and the time of Faith to do some editing. And we have a virtual assistant who now helps with some editing. So once that video's up, it's paid for, it's done, and it's going to be generating clients for the foreseeable future for basically for free. So, I mean, the ROI is almost a no-brainer. You know, we don't pay anything for YouTube. It's free. They host your videos for free. They play it for free. People find it for free. So that question is, you know, it's very easy for me to answer. It's the best thing that we've ever done in terms of ROI, the best marketing ever. But in terms of goals, you know, this is also a great question. I think this leads a lot of people to not want to even venture into this space because they're concerned about a lot of the vanity metrics. They really want likes. They really want shares. They want views. They want subscribers. And I did that for a while. You know, those were the things that I was really kind of focused on. And I actually was even waffling between platforms because I thought this YouTube thing isn't working. I'm not getting any subscribers. Maybe Instagram's better for me. Maybe Facebook is where we should make it, you know, our hub. And ultimately, I mean, YouTube is by far the best. I've experimented with the other ones. And the reason being is because our specific criminal law clients, they're looking for answers and solutions to legal problems. They start on they start on Google. Google integrates with YouTube. And so it's just a no-brainer for us. But in terms of goals, you know, I have a lot of people who will tell me, well, how do I get more subscribers? How do I, you know, get more likes, get more shares and all of those things, which is really the wrong way to look at it in my opinion. Okay. Our clients, they're charged with a DUI. Do you think that they want to subscribe to a channel about criminal law? And the answer is no, of course not. You know, this is the worst thing for them. This is the worst experience of their life. They don't want to think about this at all. So they are not going to subscribe. Are they going to share it with their friends that they're watching a DUI video? No, they're not. And so when you shift your mindset a little bit and you just say, rather than focusing on those vanity metrics, focus on providing value to the type of clients that you want. So, you know, I got clear about that. I got clear about I'm going to give actual value. You know, the 90-second video that you put it on YouTube, that is not value. By the time you do an introduction and an outro, you got 30 seconds of content. You're not giving anything to anybody. So you actually have to go out and provide, you know, strong legal answers, explain the context, explain how the law works, give them some thoughts on what to do. At the end of the video, you throw in, by the way, we can help you with this. If you need some help, we offer a free case evaluation. Just give us a call. That's the value. And so that was really, truthfully, my focus. And I think I got that from the book that was written about Jeff Bezos from Amazon. I forget the name of it right now, but, you know, the philosophy there was really, really customer focused. Don't worry about your competitors. Don't worry about what people think about you. If you're providing value to a target customer, to your target client, it's really the only thing that matters. So I wasn't even worried about, I mean, for the first, truthfully, until this year, I didn't even think about subscriber numbers. I was more concerned about watch time. I wanted to see how many people were watching these things, because I knew that if they watched it, that was because my video is so highly targeted, it's so focused, it's so narrow. I knew that every single view was probably a person who had that exact legal problem, or their family was watching it on behalf of somebody who has that exact problem. They're not watching it for entertainment. They're not, you know, bored looking at cat videos. They have a real problem. So if I can provide value, then that was the motivation for me. I'd say, wow, 10 people watch this. Most people would say only 10 people watch that. But for me, it's no, 10 people with that DUI out of that court with no priors. It's a first offense. Like, they watch that. Those are 10 highly targeted, highly interested prospective clients. And so if I could just keep giving more and more value, then it will pay off in the end. So I didn't focus on any of that, you know, any of the flashy numbers. And that was the right approach. I mean, now we have hundreds of videos on our channel, and many of them don't get more than 200 or 300 views. You know, they're a very low threshold. And so if you're listening to a lot of the gurus out there, they'll tell you that's not very successful. Well, I'll tell you it is, because we've, you know, it's responsible for over half of our revenue at our firm, and our clients rave about it. I get a lot of compliments about it. Thank you so much. I've had people come up to me at bars and restaurants and say, yeah, I was on a date with a gal one time and the waiter came up and he said, "You don't know me, but I watched your videos and you helped me through a difficult time." And I was just blown away by that. You know, wow, like what an experience. And that was early on in my video career. So that was fuel. You know, as soon as you get one of those experiences, because you're actually helping people, you just go, all right, I can do more of this. I know I can help more people. And that's what has really kind of been the fuel behind what we do here.
Well, it has to be very gratifying to know that you're not only getting clients, but you're also helping people in their daily lives. You're really able to change their lives for the better. And I think all of us sort of got into the law to help people, or at least most of us did, right? And that's got to be great, very heartening to know that you really are helping people with your videos.
Yeah, and if you do it for the right reason, I mean, you know, this is the other reason why I'm comfortable talking about it. You know, I'm encouraging more lawyers to be more helpful. You know, the old model is hiding behind your case evaluation and charging people and getting money for that case evaluation. I think that's still very valid, and it's still, you know, absolutely something that works. But in terms of marketing, go out there and just try to help people. You have all of this information. You're going to be rewarded greatly for it. They're going to consume your information. They're going to consume your content, and they're going to hire you anyways. That's been our experience.
Well, let me ask you, I know that you said you started with one particular sort of longer form video, a 30-minute video, and now it sounds like you kind of have, you have a live show, and then you have shorter videos as well. How do you determine which is right for what topic, and has your philosophy changed over time as to long form versus short form?
It has, yeah. It's sort of maturing into more of a longer form format because I think I can provide more value that way. You know, it's more information, it's more depth, it's more context, it's more just, you know, basic information. And so, you know, now when I was in the, I would call it version, you know, 2.0 of our YouTube channel, most of my videos were under 10 minutes, but they were not 2 minutes. You know, most of the other gurus that I hear from, they say that, you know, professionals should do 2-minute videos because that is the only length of time that people have an attention span for anymore. And I understand that perspective, but I completely disagree with it. I just don't think that that's accurate anymore. Yeah, it's 2 minutes if they're watching a meme on Instagram, but if they have an actual legal problem that they need help with, they're going to watch every piece of content out there. And so the more that you can give them, the more your relationship with them will be, you know, the more strength that will have. And that's just, it's just that much more value. So for a long time, I was doing 8 to 10 minutes would be sort of the sweet spot for my videos. And a lot of that was because Instagram had a 10-minute cap. LinkedIn had a 10-minute cap. they're all extending theirs because they also recognize that more information, longer videos are more engaging and it keeps users on their platform longer. I mean, Joe Rogan, you know, he has his show go on for 3 hours and I listen to the whole thing most of the time. You know, I'm listening as I'm going throughout my day. So the idea that you got to keep it short because people don't have any attention span is I think just bogus in today's world with today's media consumption habits. But really the, you know, the rule of thumb is you got to answer the question and you got to provide value in doing that. It doesn't have to be a 30-minute video if it takes a 5-minute response. You know, 5 minutes may be all you need to answer that question. But when you can provide a deeper level, and that's where we're going. So I'm kind of going through all of my old content and saying, I'm going to go deeper on that one. I spent 8 minutes on that. I'm going to spend 30 on that because I really want to dig in and explain that a little bit more. And, you know, our technology is improving. I've got better cameras. I'm now using this PowerPoint live stream format. And I'm actually even giving more away. I just did a video that was 30 something minutes on filing appeals in Arizona. And I actually give them at the end of the video a free form. You know, hey, go to our website, download this free form, file it yourself if you want. You know, file the notice of appeal, go do it. And then if you need help with the actual appeal, you can give us a call later. But, you know, it's more. How can I give them more so they can do more on their own without my help? And you know, the secret is they call and hire us anyways.
Yeah, you know, the analogy that I would use is when you have a medical problem, what does everyone do when
right.
they need to find out? They go online. They Google, I have a headache. Why is that? I had too much to drink. What do I do? And even for very serious things, people will go online and look. I mean, especially, I mean, thinking about, you know, COVID-19 and all that, and, you know, what I have this symptoms, I have this symptom, do I have COVID? I mean, if it's true for the medical professional, for people who need help with medicine, why wouldn't it be true for lawyers and for the law? And your example is one where it works.
Yeah, WebMD, you know, what do they have, like 8 to 10 pages of different things you can read through? I mean, people want information. If they have a problem, they want a solution. And YouTube is a great way to do it. I don't think there's anything more powerful than video.
Well, let me ask you. So for people who are interested in getting into this thing, because I think, you've sold me and I'm you know, I do a lot of different things for marketing, and I'm curious as to where to start. So if I'm a young lawyer, or really any lawyer, and I'm really interested in getting started, do you need professional level equipment? Do you need a marketing assistant? How do you get started if you wanted to make these videos for YouTube?
So in my program, I tell people they don't need much of anything. Basically, I have an equipment list that I can send to you. You can link to it if you want, but it's really basic. I encourage people to get just a simple webcam. The one I recommend is the Logitech 4K camera. It's called the Brio. Logitech Brio plugs right into your USB. And the other thing that I also really encourage is a USB lapel microphone. I think that's it. I mean, it's about $130 to get all of that. You can get a light ring for another $80 and you're essentially done. What I really encourage people to do is to make sure their audio is good. You know, you can watch a video that has mediocre video, but if it's got bad audio, if it's chirping and you know, grainy, people are not going to listen to it. That's a hard no, because most people are actually listening to the video and just kind of watching how your face is. So that's it. And I tell them, plug in the webcam and start recording. You know, I have there's a lot more to it in terms of scripting and how to edit your titles and tags. And there is some more that goes into it, but I really want people to just start recording, because oftentimes what I've seen with many lawyers is they'll join my program and they'll have all the basics. They'll go through the course. They'll do everything they need to do, and they still won't make a video for 6 months later, you know? And so I'm hopping on the coaching calls and where are your videos at? And they're just, you know, it's sort of paralysis by analysis. They're overthinking a lot of what needs to be done rather than just doing it. And so the mantra that I always say is, done is better than perfect. It's okay to be different. It's okay not to be 100%, you know, on point. Go through my channel if you want. You'll see there's many iterations of videos that were pretty bad, but they're still up there and they're still generating, you know, interest in our firm. And you don't need to drop thousands of dollars to get this thing going, but you do need to start doing it, because the faster you can start exercising that muscle, the better you'll get at it.
Absolutely. So you mentioned your course a couple of times. I wanted to give my listeners an opportunity to find out more about your course and more about, you know, how to find you if people had questions about how to get started on YouTube. So can you tell us a little bit about your course and how we can find you?
Yeah, thank you for asking me about it. The course is essentially what I wish I would have had when I started my video marketing career. You know, I made a ton of mistakes, and there's a lot of things I would have done differently had I known what I know now. And so I built this course to help people avoid a lot of those common pitfalls. I mean, some of them are for a long time, I was doing short videos. That was a mistake. And so I've got, you know, different strategies and frameworks on how to make longer videos, you know, how to do an introduction, how to script things, what tools to use. I've got recommendations for, you know, different pieces of software that really help you optimize your videos. And, you know, it's something where, because of a lot of the fear that lawyers have about getting behind a camera, I wanted to create a group, a community that was sort of like a 24/7 rally for lawyers for video production, because it is a scary thing. You know, when you get on there and you turn it on and you record it and you post it and you don't have anybody to go like it, you don't have anybody to offer you any constructive feedback on it, it's a scary kind of isolated world. And so if you can get plugged in with another group of lawyers, many of whom may be in the same practice area and who may be a little bit further down the road than you are, who can say, yeah, man, I know how that feels. You know, I still get that feeling, but you did great. Maybe, you know, move the camera up a little bit or move it down, or, you know, post the comments so we can all go like it or subscribe to your channel. That's really what it is. You know, it's about bringing a group of attorneys together who are interested enough in growing their business that they're willing to make themselves a little bit uncomfortable and do things that maybe, you know, their local pay-per-click guru would not ever advise them to do, because they don't get any money off you having a successful YouTube channel. But the program's very inexpensive. It's $99 a month right now. It's due up for a refresh, so I'm going to be, you know, refreshing everything because it's just coming up on its first year anniversary. We've got, you know, some great members in there who are seeing a lot of success with it. So you pay $99 a month, you get access to the group. You also get two live group coaching calls. So we have an office hours call once a month that we will address any technical problems that people have. So if somebody says, I can't get this piece of gear to work, or I'm having problems encoding something or whatever that is, it's time for technical troubleshooting stuff, or it's just video reviews. So like last month I went through people's channels and I did an audit and I said, okay, make your tags better here, or you know, adjust your description. This one's not specific enough. And so it's a little bit of that. Then the second group coaching call is all about new techniques, new lessons, new things that we're doing. So I'm kind of taking people along my journey. You know, the last couple months I've said, we're going into live streaming now. I don't know how to do this stuff, but I'm going to figure it out. And so we're starting a show. Here's my plan. Here's the flywheel. Last month I had Faith, who's my creative director, come on, and I just interviewed her. I said, hey, this is, you know, I want to encourage people to go find their own Faith, you know, to find somebody who can help them with this stuff. And so we talked a lot about what she does and what I could have done better to get her trained up faster, and, you know, some of the difficulties of her job. And she showed us her calendar. And so it's just kind of a behind the scenes of what we do and what I'm working on, in the hopes that other lawyers will not get screwed the same way that we did, and they'll skip a lot of the headache that I wish I would have avoided.
Cool. Well, for those of my listeners who are interested in at least finding out more about your course, where would they do that?
Yeah, thanks. So it's gruelermethod.com is the name of it. So if you just go to www.gruelermethod.com, there's a free webinar. You can submit a form and you can sign up for the course if you'd like. They can also send me an email if they're interested. My email is robert@gruelermethod.com. My firm's YouTube channel, if they want to see what we're doing and how we do it, you can just very easy go to rrlaw.tv. So instead of the .com, just put a .tv. It'll forward you right over to our YouTube channel. You can see exactly what we do, and it's growing. It's a lot of fun. We're getting, you know, more and more subscribers every week, and yeah, I'm excited for where it's going.
Awesome. Well, Rob, thank you so much for coming on and telling all my listeners about YouTube and the advantages of really answering questions and providing value that people are really starving for when they come in, you know, when they come upon a legal question or legal issue. So thanks so much for being on.
Thank you, David. And listen, I love what you're doing. I really encourage lawyers to be, you know, a little more proactive with their marketing, because it really is easy to delegate that out. And so I appreciate the fact that you're having this conversation, because there are a lot of lawyers out there who are hurting, and it starts with their marketing company. And so when they get a little bit of a better handle on this and start, you know, taking some responsibility for controlling what goes out, they're going to see growth by leaps and bounds. So I want to thank you for, you know, inviting me on and having this conversation.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. Thank you. All right. Well, thanks, Rob.
Thanks, David.